Osiris.
All right, we're live. Hey, everybody. I'm RJ. I'm with Brian. We are here to talk about Live Tracks Volume 8. We have some stuff we're going to talk about before we get into that, but Brian, how are you?
I'm good, man. I'm good. Everything is calm and collected here in the studio. Outside is like just a war zone of competing children and puppies.
Yeah.
But everything's good right now. It's a hot day here in Denver, Colorado. But, you know, it's beautiful. It's sunny for like the 450th day in a row. It's amazing how it works here.
That's awesome.
How are you?
It's very warm here, too. I'm fine. I want to, you know, dealing with kids during the summer, it's complicated. And people who understand. I do want to say that I have a different kind of seltzer today. You've had this AHA seltzer, right?
I have, yes.
So it's made by Coca-Cola, which is why it's becoming ubiquitous. But when Tom and I did our live show road trip, every stop we made, which was often, I would get like two of these and I would drink them, and they come in like the 16-ounce cans. And I just saw them at the store yesterday and I bought some. And, you know, I don't know how I feel about it. I mean, it's a Coca-Cola product, but, you know, it tastes pretty good and it's kind of taking over.
My fridge is... it's Topo Chico on two shelves, and then it's Waterloo, it's LaCroix Lime, and LaCroix Tangerine. And those are – I'm kind of in that zone at this point in time. And then as we've talked about on previous episodes, there will be a little bit, just a little bit of soda in the back in case I go running or mow the lawn and I need like a huge sugar intake like right away. There will be like some root beer in the back. But that's – I like AHA. It's good. I'm stuck on the Waterloo and the Lime LaCroix.
I understand. It's okay. I just wanted to point that out. Okay, we're going to get into the show in a minute. I do want to say we have a live show coming up on Monday. I'm starting to prep for this show, and I'm really excited about it. It's in Ardmore, right outside of Philly. It's the day before the two fish shows at the Man. We are just going to be interviewing three amazing guitarists. They're going to play music for us, and we're going to have a good night, and we'd love to see you there. It's going to be about 3 hours of music and conversation with Chris Forsythe and Tom Hamilton and Daniel Donato and a great house band. So everyone should go check it out. If you're listening, you can go to osirispod.com/osirislive to find out more about the show. And Brian, because this is the live show, I wanted to ask you, this morning I listened to the Peach Fest sets from three bands. And I'd heard all of them before, but not these sets. And I want to ask you about these three bands quickly. Eggie, Melt, Dogs in a Pile. Are you on any of these bands? Like what do any of those bands mean to you at the moment?
The band that means the most to me out of those three right now is Eggie. I am deeply fascinated by these guys. Big shout out to The Great Beyond podcast, which is part of Osiris Media, which they focus mainly on Goose, but they are the guys that turned me on to Eggie, which makes sense because Eggie feels like they're at kind of the level that Goose was at in 2018, 2019 in terms of their development, their kind of growth. They, to me, I didn't think it was possible for a young jam band to come up like this. First and foremost, the thing that hooked me with them was they do a Big Thief cover of a song Time Escaping, and they jam it out really, really nicely.
I just heard this morning.
That's what you heard?
So good. Yeah.
It's so good.
That was part of the set. Really good. Really good.
It's like the perfect song for them in the way that like the first time I heard Goose, they were covering Spoon's Inside Out, and like that was a perfect entry point for them. But Eggie has this kind of... there's a goofiness, there's a weirdness, there's a progness, there's kind of danger in a lot of their music that is really exciting to me. There's a lot of complicated rhythms in a lot of their music. It kind of takes, kind of the Animal Collective approach, but with like a little bit of a darker sentiment, and adds a jam band touch to it. So I really dig them. Melt, I would say, would be like number two then for me. Their lead guitarist, Marlo Schenkweiler, is a good friend of Osiris. She produces Karina Reichman's Inappropriate Happiness. And she just shreds on guitar, man. And that band feels like a modern day, like, soul revival in some cases. Like, there's just a ton of energy. There's a ton of good vibes. The band has, I think, like 7 members in it. And there's just like really, really great music that's coming off the stage. Every member of the band is allowed to shine in like soloing, is allowed to shine in terms of like from a song by song basis, like really showcasing who they are as a musician. And there's just like a really, really good energy around them. The last one, Dogs in a Pile, I have not yet listened to, but I want to, I feel like I need to give them a spin here. Do you recommend them? And what are your thoughts on the other two?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I agree with your sentiments, and I got to talk to Melt last year. They're really, really fun. And, I really like them. I like the way that the chemistry is really good. Dogs in a Pile is a little more, reminds me a little bit more of like a bluesy band, you know, whereas like Eggy is more of a jam band. I mean, I'm generalizing, but, 3 amazing young bands that are playing great music, and the Peach sets from all 3 are a good place to start. And yeah, I'm going to go see Eggy in Asbury Park the night before the AC shows.
Nice.
I think Tom and I are going to go. That should be fun. And I'm looking forward to seeing the others. So, Brian, we are going to – a couple listeners have reached out and said, you know, this is amazing, and thank you guys for diving so deeply into Dave Matthews, but you don't have to go through all of the live tracks releases. And we agree. We are going to go through 10, live tracks 10. So we are going to do 8 today, 9 tomorrow, and 10 on Monday. And then next Tuesday, we're going to turn to the live releases of another artist, which we'll talk about tomorrow. But we are going to do 10 of these, and then we're going to go to a different artist, and then we'll probably come back. I mean, we'll come back. We just feel like we all are going to take a quick break from Dave Matthews and move on to another artist.
Yeah, I think, you know, to just piggyback off that, like when we conceived of this show, the idea of it is to explore a live band in depth, in regularity over a couple of weeks, and take their live archival release catalog and break it down volume by volume. And I think we initially thought we were going to do all of live tracks and then move on. And then we were like, you know, what would be more interesting is to take a break, explore different artists with all these things that we've learned about one artist, now be able to apply some of that to a different artist, and then keep moving around and figuring out other artists that we can do these deep dives in. Cause so many bands have released live archival series at this point in time, but then be it a couple months from now, who knows, return to Dave Matthews with even more insight and with even more thought, and come back to this band with more knowledge about them that I think will keep the show fresh. We'll keep listeners learning a ton, and, you know, will prevent us from getting to a point where we get in any way stale. And I think that's going to help keep the show, no pun intended, but lively.
And a comment you put up on the screen just for people who are listening: Dogs in a Pile covers Fish. They played Julius December 10th, 2021, 27 years after a great Fish show from December 10th, 1994, but that's not part of this show at all. It shouldn't be anyway. So, all right, Brian, can I interject one thing really quickly,
sure. Just based off of our intro here, I'm presenting to you an idea right now that I have not presented to you. So whatever we say, listeners, viewers, is all live. Okay. I think that we should take, be it those 3 bands that we talked about, Melt, Eggy, and Dogs in a Pile, or maybe include some other bands, but I think we should have a segment of the live show at some point here in the near future be going into those bands' chronological development to see like what is a young band like at like their infancy, especially with the ability to release so many shows live through places like Nugs, through ReListen, through Archive, to give them a chance to, or to give us a chance to like really challenge ourselves of looking at these bands kind of under a microscope at this stage of development. So I'm just throwing that out there. Maybe yeah. a couple sessions from now we do that.
I think that's a good idea. Good idea. I think everyone watching and listening agrees. So that's good. Unanimous. All right. So Brian, I just saw a tweet from a listener that said, this is top five live tracks ever. So we're going to get into this, but let's talk about this show because we are now, yesterday we were in New Year's 96. Now we're in August of 2004. One of the worst months for live music in my life anyway. But what was going on here with the band and once they rolled into Alpine?
So the band at this point in time is on a pretty extensive summer tour. They go basically from June until September. We covered the tour finale in Live Tracks 2, 9/12, 2004 from San Francisco. I wanted to read, just like to get into this. This is the rundown from the management's perspective of this show and kind of a reason of why they explain or why they release this. And it kind of will jump us into the next phase, the next segment here. But this was the first night of a two-night stand at one of DMB's most traveled to summer tour stops. The Alpine show is a near perfect set list from the show opening greeting, hello again, to the encore featuring Typical Situation, followed by Warehouse. New song, Sugar Will, was played as a long jam, and another song making its debut that summer, Joyride, was also featured on the set list. A special highlight of the Alpine Night One Live Tracks recording is Crazy Easy, which was never released live. A true surprise of the show included Super Freak, DMB's tribute to the late, great Rick James, which sent the crowd into a frenzy. More on the crowd being in a frenzy later. Other noteworthy parts of the show includes Dave singing parts number 36 on the outro of Every Day, Solemnly Beautiful, I'll Back You Up, and Bartender, which was dedicated to the troops working hard to keep the world safe for us. It seems to me, as I'm reading through that and as I'm thinking about this show, this is a band... We talked about this in Live Tracks too. This is a band that has kind of recovered from the challenges of 2001, 2002, the Lily White, Everyday, Busted Stuff era. By all accounts, had a really great 2003 and has written a ton of great songs in 2004 and is now deep in the summer tour playing these, all in advance of another looming challenge in 2005. I'm going to tip my hand here, and this is I'm sorry to everyone out there who I'm going to try to explain myself as best as possible. I don't agree with the management write-up, and I don't agree with the praise that I've heard thus far for this show. It feels very straightforward, feels rote, it feels like just another concert that, like, for me, there wasn't a moment that leaped off that blew me away. I mean, there were two moments I really enjoyed from the show, but overall I was kind of like, it feels like a lighter version of the Golden Gate Park show to me. I don't know your thoughts on that, getting into kind of where the band is and what your thoughts were on this show, if you agree or if you are vehemently disagreeing with me.
I don't vehemently disagree. I would say that I think like you mentioned, this was basically like, you know, two thirds of the way through the tour. So show number 32 of 47 of the summer tour. I think the Alpine, you know, setting is special and interesting. I think that the perfect set list thing is very interesting. And people who are watching, please elaborate on that. Cause I thought we can talk about the song kind of selection as it goes through, but I think out of the eight that we've listened to, I would not put this in like my top three, personally, but I'm very interested. I think there must be more to it that you and I don't quite grasp or at least don't get the, you know, obviously the hype around it. I mean, Alpine is a classic venue, obviously. I mean, the Dead Fish, you know, along with lots of others have played there. And I think part of it is just being there, but I don't know. I it's interesting. It's a little puzzling to me, but I think we should just start talking through it. And can I just say that this was the first time I've ever heard the song Hello Again. I don't think I know that song.
They played it in live tracks too, but I can see like there was a lot of new material that we were getting at that point. I mean, I get it. It's we're battling a lot of new material at this point where we're trying to like re-engage with this band while also being like, oh, these are songs I've never heard before.
Well, what did you think about that? And I know that one of your ideas for this show was just sort of the combination of the old and the new, but how do you feel about that opener? Because I think as a song that I wasn't familiar with, it was not like a huge energy boost from the beginning, like a lot of these live tracks where you get like a Seek Up or something where it like really gets the crowd engaged. But how did you feel about this opening sequence and kind of combining these new songs?
Yeah, I thought the opening segment, I guess if you would go from Hello Again through Crazy Easy, was overall really strong. This is the 32nd of 46 performances of Hello Again on this tour alone. So like this song, Crazy Easy, is played 43 times. Joyride is played 47 times. Sugar Will is played 45 times. Like by this point in the summer, they are pushing these songs really, really hard. And I have to imagine we get this sometimes with Fish where they'll debut a song. And I think like most recently, a song like Everything's Right. It's debuted kind of mid first set, not a ton of fanfare. People are like, oh, cool, this is a good song. But by like the sixth performance of it, it gets a dynamic spot and it gets that like opening slot. It gets the set two opening slot. And whenever that happens, it means like, okay, this song is kind of like moved up. It's a song that's now in the rotation and the band wants to see what can we really do with this. And I'm looking at the D&B Almanac right now. This was the first time that Hello Again was an opener. So that feels significant to me. I kind of agree with you, like coming at this in a vacuum. And I'm saying all this because I wonder if you were at home or if you were following this tour in depth, the way that you and I follow other bands' tours in depth, would you be blown away that they're opening up with Hello Again? I don't really know. The segment, though, that goes Granny number 41 and The Stone, I really like that. Those are all three older songs. I love number 41 is my favorite Dave Matthews song, which shockingly is only played 10 times this year. So it's like a relative rarity, it would seem. But Granny only has 17 performances throughout the overall tour. The Stone, a little bit more, about half performances. But that segment there, and then culminating with Crazy Easy, which is a song I've read a lot about, I hadn't heard to this point in time. You get this like mix of some of the best rare songs, rare at that time, and then some of the new songs. I think that at this point, this mixture of old and new works, where I think it finds challenges is when you move into kind of the latter part of this overall set. You get like a relative rarity, like Help Myself, an older song, I'll Back You Up. And then you get Joyride, which I'm not a huge fan of. Great version of Grey Street, and then an awesome version of Sugar Will. But then, of course, you're ending the set with Ants Marching and Every Day. And like, it's this mix of where are we at as a band? Like, is it our old songs that are still guiding us forward, or is it our new songs that are going to be like the dominant feature? And this is something we've talked a lot about. What are your thoughts about that dichotomy?
Yeah, I mean, I think the just and putting up a comment from Brett. Thanks, Brett, for the comment.
This is really helpful
for checking us out. He says, for me, partly due to 41 Stone, Bartender, Warehouse, all in one set list. Sugar Will, Joyride, Hello Again, Crazy Easy, new songs from 2004 that were very popular. So that makes sense to me. Thanks, Brett. I liked the. I mean, there's a. I said this before, so it's probably not right, but I felt like this was the first time we've heard Granny on one of the live tracks, but maybe we heard it once before. It was the first one. Okay.
That's a debut. We get a couple debuts in the show.
There was, I thought it was, one interesting thing to me is like in terms of the old and new. So early in the show, 41, this is like Fish playing Tweezer, you know, in the third slot of the first set. It's sort of like, does that, I'm wondering, people listening, watching, let us know, but does that set you up for an awesome show? Or is it like, all right, the biggest possible jam is off the table, you know? It wasn't a particularly different version from what we would hear, although having Butch Taylor is always great. But I'm curious how that hits, because that was surprising to me. I think the Stone, it almost seemed like Carter's drums were like turned up louder. He was just so good and so powerful. And I thought that part of it, like the 41, the Stone was great. And then Crazy Easy, like never heard it. Don't know what it is. I was just sort of like, no idea what's going on here. And then one of the things I want to talk about, there's so much to say. This happened a couple times up to this point. This is the peak, maybe, of the crowd sing-alongs with DMB. And I'm just curious, like, what DMB fans and you, Brian, think about this, because you have at least five songs in this set, in these 21 songs, maybe more like 8 or 10, that get like full-on crowd sing-alongs. And Dave kind of plays into it, you know, by backing off the mic at certain times. But So Much to Say was like a huge, huge one of those. How do you feel about the crowd sing-alongs?
I feel a lot about it. I think the simplest way to say it is it's something I feel like we've learned in the last 3 weeks talking about this band. Crowd sing-alongs are fun and fine to me. I think it's like a part of the rock collective. It's one of those things that like, I think has only really been incorporated with Fish in the Woo, rather than like an actual like part where we all like sing along and like Trey turns the mic to us type of thing. Maybe Sleepy Monkey, but like the Dead had like Not Fade Away, that like by the 80s, you know, they'd leave the stage for the encore and like the whole crowd would sing them back on by singing Not Fade Away. There's that great video from Fare Thee Well of like people streaming out of Soldier Field, walking under the tunnels, by the Field Museum, like blasting that song. So like, I think it's like a cool camaraderie moment. I think the thing that, I don't know if I would say like annoys me, or I don't even know if I would say disappoints me, but it's just like something I've learned about this band is crowd sing-alongs seem to have like an impact on a show. Like if there's multiple of them, it means it was like a really good show. And for me, that would have like a 2% impact on me walking away from a concert being like, that was a really, really great experience. And it feels like there's a lot of them in this show, which is like this give and take of energy between the band and the audience, which cool. Like that feeling is necessary. I just don't know if I necessarily want that feeling to be what drives me to think a concert was a really great experience. What are your thoughts?
Yeah. Yeah. I think it's interesting. I mean, I like the integration of the crowd into the experience. And obviously this has been happening for, you know, as long as there've been concerts. It's not like, it's not like a DMB invented thing. I just think it's an interesting dynamic at a show, that I don't think it either even takes away from it or adds to it. I just think it's like an interesting element that you don't see with a lot of other live bands. And maybe it's like it's frowned upon a little bit, like in terms of what's cool, you know. I think that there's a lot of indie bands and maybe jam bands that like wouldn't approve of that happening at their shows. But I think for this kind of experience at Alpine Valley, it seems pretty solid. So I just think it's like entertaining and kind of funny. I have to say that I appreciate the dedication to Rick James, but I'm not a fan of this. I'm not a fan of this cover.
So this gets us into my second theme. And I appreciate you stepping out with your thoughts on this. I cringed heavily during this. Something about an acoustic guitar and a violin playing 70s funk music just doesn't totally align. Also, there's a lot of complications around Rick James that have come out in the years since, and like just like a straight up, hey, great man, we want to send our blessings out to him. Like, I get the guy passed. It's a song that everybody knows. It kind of leads to, we talked a lot with Robbie about this last week during our the episode that we did on Live Track 6, where the band was at Fenway Park for two shows. And it's kind of a lot of what I've been thinking about this volume, as well as Net Tomorrow's volume from 2007, as well as next week's volume, Live Tracks 10 from 2007, is by this point in time, there feels like there's like a caricature of who Dave Matthews Band is supposed to be. And this So Much to Say that goes into Super Freak rather than Anyone Seen the Bridge, which then goes into Too Much, feels very much like a gimmick. And it's funny. It's humorous. I get it. I imagine being there. Like, we've both been there at concerts where like something happens that doesn't totally translate back home. This is the only time that they've ever played Super Freak. So I get the like fun factor of that. It kind of just like, it hit on two things that we talked a lot about in recent episodes. The Wedding Band covers, where it's just like, why are we covering? Like, why is this the cover that we're doing? When like, this is a band that like used to cover Long Black Veil. I don't know how much they still do it now, but like, that was one of the first times I ever heard that song. That is a deep, deep cut from the band. This is a band that covered The Maker, like still does to this day, by Daniel Lanois. Like, incredible cover. There's others that like I'm forgetting about, but like in this mid 2000s era, it's almost like, let's put Dave up there and have him play a funny funk song. And the crowd goes crazy. And that's like an extracted part of his personality that's being showcased in a way that just doesn't totally appeal to me. What are your thoughts on it?
I think that's a fair summary. I mean, I think that's a good summary of my feelings about it. But I do think the Too Much, Bartender, When the World Ends segment is pretty good. I do have to say that the kind of so we're in 2004, right? It's a pretty, that was the year I worked on a Senate campaign in Florida that year, and it was, you know, it was politically a pretty fraught time. Everyone knew John Kerry wasn't going to win, but we were trying. Any alternative to Bush at the time was good. But we talked a little bit about this yesterday with Matt. The like dedicating Bartender to the troops, I thought was interesting. And I guess I've never thought about Bartender outside of being like a sad love song. So I didn't really like, I think I must be missing the meaning of that song because that part of it was a little bit like, wait, I appreciate that sentiment, but it was curious. But I will say that especially with Butch on this Bartender, the solo, especially because he's playing piano, and it's really kind of, the jam is kind of like upbeat. It's got a good groove. It's sort of doesn't match the tone of the song in a good way. I think it's like a good contrast with like the subject matter and what Dave said at the beginning. But so I think the jam's really good, but I wasn't sure about the troops. I mean, not in general, but just in that specific context. And before you go on that, Brett says Fish does sabotage. Fish has done.
Oops.
I mean, we gotta say none of this is specific to DMB. I mean, on the Helping Friendly podcast and other podcasts, we talk about so many things that we dislike about what Fish does, maybe possibly more than is necessary. So, you know, no, this is not a, out of offense, no offense to anyone involved, but
yeah, no, it's not. And I think to Brett's point, like there are, we could sit here and list a dozen covers that Fish has played that we're like, eh, I don't know about that. Like there is a pretty well documented Kid Rock performance with Fish that, there's also Girls. There are some bad performances that, that the band has played. So I totally agree with that. all right. There's a lot of worms that you opened up in that can there. So I'm going to try to keep this as concise as possible. First and foremost, Bartender, Concert Vids, and Brett Woden, I know that one of you guys or both of you can correct me if I'm wrong here, but I've always been under the impression that the Lillywhite sessions were scrapped in part because Dave was dealing with a lot of personal issues. Those came out in the lyrics in a very dark way, and that people within his circle heard them and were like, these cannot be released. Like this is way, way too dark and way too on the nose. And I've always thought in Bartender that that's like, that's a love song. And it's also a song about literally like, I'm at the end of my rope. I don't have any place to turn. And like, you're basically just like dousing yourself at that point in alcohol to like numb the pain of whatever it is that you're experiencing. For that like interpretation that I have, it is, I put this as one of the top five best Dave Matthews songs ever written. I think it is just a stunning achievement. Every time I've heard it live, it blows me away. This version, the version from Fenway, I was like, holy crap, like within 3 to 5 years, they totally reinvent this song in like a jamming vehicle standpoint. I seem to remember like in 2000, there was a lot of violin at the end. And like here, to your point, Butch Taylor is really taking the lead. And like the version from Fenway Park, just like it was incredible. I've never associated this song as a political song. And Concert Vids is saying the first lyrics are, if I go before I'm old, brother of mine, please don't forget me if I go, which I guess, yes, you can loosely put that to, you're in Iraq and Afghanistan and we want to like send our sentiments out to you. So that's like, I'm slightly confused, but like I can get that from a very loose standpoint. Shifting gears. 2004, that is my personal political awakening. I was coming out of my freshman year in college. I took the greatest class I've ever taken in any subject. It was the history of modern terrorism. Went from the French Revolution all the way up to the War on Terror, which was at that point 2 years old. And it totally like changed my life and changed my perspective on the world. I was raised in a very conservative Republican family and like realizing, I went through a lot of realizations that spring and that summer. And that was also an election year. And it was a very hypercharged election year, even though to your point, we all kind of knew John Kerry just doesn't have this. And George Bush has this. At that point in time, if I had known that like a band that I loved was saying, let's like play this next one for the troops. Like that whole idea of the troops was very complicated because you had memories of Vietnam coming back. There wasn't a draft, but it was like, we all knew like these guys should not be sent over to Iraq, but there was a very politicized message from the right at that time that you support the troops or nothing else. There's no nuance here. And supporting the troops also means you support the war. And so like Dave to say this, it feels very, very controversial in a lot of cases to me. It feels like everything we talked about from the 90s of like these platitudes of, hey man, save the whales. Hey man, you know, these politicians in Africa are like really cool guys. And like we should really support them is like just transferred to democratic centrism of support the troops. I'm not going to say anything more because like, if I say anything more complicated, I'm immediately lionized as though like I'm against the troops and against freedom and blah, blah, blah. And it kind of hearing this kind of made me throw up a bit inside.
thank you for that. So, okay, great. But great jam.
Great jam.
According to the jam flow, the show flow on antsmarching.org, which is a great, great resource. Thanks to those guys for everything. It's amazing. Learned so much from that site. According to the show flow chart, it really drops at When the World Ends. I like that song, and I didn't think that felt like a dip. I think the Help Myself, which I think, you know, again, going back to some of the conversations we had, this is an old song that that resurfaces. I thought like
the Scream 2 soundtrack.
Oh, really?
Wow. Yeah.
That's amazing. I think When the World Ends, Help Myself, I'll Back You Up, I thought was all good. Like I didn't feel a dip at all. I think Joyride is one of the songs that there's this, we talked about this a little bit yesterday, and maybe we talked about this with Robbie last week, but this kind of like the Joyride message and like the kind of on the nose songwriting that was happening, I think that song was fairly new, right? 2004.
Yeah. Joyride, I believe, is someone correct us if we're wrong, but I believe that's a 2004 debut.
And Concert Vids 34 says When the World End Gets Old After You Hear It Live a Few Times. I totally, totally get that. The Joyride lyrics to me are like, this falls in the like, just a little on the nose for me in 2004. It's like, you know, we're just staring at blankly at the screen. I keep you there and your money too. The money's clean because we scrub it good with guns and gasoline. We could save the world. You know, and then there's like it's a little much for me. And I'm curious if this is like if people like the song. There's a lot about bobblehead Jesus in the song. There's a lot that's just sort of like, it's very on the nose of like consumer, you know, just like a consumerist kind of society. And I wonder what others think of that, or what you think of it, Brian.
I'm in the same boat with you, and I'm looking at its overall performance, which is wild. It's played like every other show in 2004, and then it's teased once in 2005. It's played five times in 2006, and then since then, it's played once in 2011, five times in 2013, and looks like seven times in 2019. So, like, it's rarely been played, which I wonder, it feels very written for the moment. I feel like the closest comparison I can make, it kind of reminds me of Crowd Control by Phish, which was released in 2004, felt like a political message and has been played very, very rarely since then, because it kind of feels trapped in early 2000s. Like, the thing that's wild to think about this band, and like this gets back to Bartender, but it gets to like a song like this, is there wasn't a lot to write about politically in the 1990s for a lot of these bands. So you had like a band like Dave Matthews Band that like wrote about just being good to each other and like just vibing with each other,
yeah,
and loving each other. And like these, you know, it kind of felt like the 70s, like the mid 70s singer songwriter era, where like you could write about more interpersonal, like ideas and very like small concepts in a good way. But then there was this sentiment around 2003, 2004 that like, hey, we've got stuff happening and like we need music to respond the way that music responded in the 60s. And this song kind of reminds me of that in that sense, like this very kind of blasé critique of capitalism and like where we're at this point in time. And I think that's reflected in it not being played a lot since.
That makes sense. That makes sense. I want to go back to something that ConcertVids34 said just about antsmarching.org. He said, keep in mind the show flow is vastly different than the overall fan's perception. Ants can be overly critical with show flow compared to even the average diehard fan. So that's a good note. I feel like that's the same as the Phish.net rankings or something. It's like pretty different from what even the kind of average big fan would say. Okay, so that's Joyride. And I mean, I think this, now that we're talking about it, maybe I was a little more harsh than I should have been, just in terms of the overall show, because I really enjoyed the whole thing. And I liked this Gray Street, Sugar Will, ants marching every day closing segment. You know, the ending with ants marching out of a good jam like Sugar Will seems like a pretty common way for that to go. But I thought this was a good segment.
I did too. I think what I was saying at the start, like the challenge I find in this segment is like we're playing a bunch of new songs, but we're also playing these old standards that like we play regularly at this point in time. And like are required to end a show on a high note. I thought it's not my pick when we do the award segment, but I thought this Sugar Will was somehow better than the version from San Francisco, which I loved. That version had Carlos Santana on it. This was like eerie and creepy. And you know, we talked about this yesterday when talking about the 96 show. There felt like there was like a template being made around this time of like what is a Dave Matthews song. We'll talk about this a bit more tomorrow because I have a lot of thoughts on that. But like Sugar Will feels like a new opportunity for this band. And it really, really fascinates me. The two times that we've heard it, I've been like, this is the kind of song, as someone who really loved Some Devil when it came out, but wasn't listening to Dave Matthews Band, like Sugar Will feels like elements of Some Devil to me. I love how it's stretched out. It feels minimalist. And it is wild how Ants Marching, like, it's just so goddamn reliable. Like, every time they play it,
yeah,
I'm like, this is going to be the version that's just going to be, like, standard and straightforward. And I'm going to be like, whatever, it's Ants Marching. But, like, it's so infectious. The one thing I will say, just, like, ending this set. So I said this a couple episodes ago. I'm really conscious as I'm listening to these shows of not looking ahead at the set list. I don't want to have any knowledge as I'm listening to them. I'll check a song if like, I don't know what the song is, but like when they started Every Day and he was singing the number 36 lyrics, I was like, holy shit, we got to bust out here. Like, oh my God, this is amazing. This is going to like actually, and then Every Day comes in and I was disappointed. I'm just going to be honest. I was like, I just wanted like this show to have like one moment that, you know, for me, like totally like sent it to another level. And, it was still Every Day, even though it's got the cool, you know, the honey, honey, it's great.
Well, the Sugar Will, it's like almost 15 minutes long. And, I the thing that I liked about that jam, I agree. I thought that was cool. Really cool. And Butch was on the keys, but not on the piano. He was on like synths and like some organ. And it was, I think that added to that kind of a different sound texture than that you were talking about, which I think is really, really cool. All right. So Brian, we should talk about our awards because it's almost time for us to eat lunch. So, nice. You know, that has to happen. But we have to get to that first. So Bathroom Break. I think based on our previous conversation, we're already pretty clear on that. Maybe possibly in agreement.
We're in agreement. I think we're in agreement. Super Freak is my Bathroom Break. I'm hearing that and I'm just like, dude, I'm going to get out of here. You guys all enjoy this. Cool. Have some fun with Rick James for a little bit. And I'm going to go wander up the hill, get some calf workout, maybe get some fried cheese curds up there. You know, they've got good fried cheese curds at Alpine Valley. Maybe get like a Lagunitas and then head back down for the remainder of the show. Are you doing the same thing? Are you joining me?
Yeah, I think so. But I mean, it's only 2.5 minutes. So I think we're probably emphasizing it a little too much in terms of like a break.
I just don't want to give it any sort of recognition. I was not happy.
There's not much time to do anything. So, you know, then you come, if you're gone, then you miss too much. And then maybe you start to miss Bartender, which is a great jam. But I agree that that's the point at which I'm like, okay.
What if I get back for the jam segment of Bartender, but I miss the troops comment?
I think that's fine. I think that's fine. I think this, but the show is, when I listened to it, I was like, I'm not sure I see anything quite that special about this. But now that we've talked through it, I actually feel like it's better than I did when we started talking about it.
I kind of agree.
So we're brought along, guys. Thank you for for coming to hang out with us.
Thanks for coming along on our joyride.
Yeah, exactly. MVP, Brian, what do you got?
I feel like a broken record, but it's Leroy. Leroy's my favorite part of rediscovering Dave Matthews Band in these last couple of weeks. And in every era, post 96, I want to say, he just seems to be where my ears go. I say post 96 because there's so much of like that early part of Dave Matthews that feels defined by Dave. It feels defined by Carter, and Boyd's violin is everywhere. It's really kind of in the late, like Before These Crowded Streets and Beyond era where like his sax really comes out. But ConcertVid says here, Leroy is the MVP. His sax shines in the open spaces of songs like Crazy Easy and Sugar Will. And that's exactly where my thought is as well. Who's your MVP?
I really heard Carter so much through this show. And there were a couple times, The Stone and a couple of the other jams where I just thought he really shined through. Butch would be a runner up because I think he adds a lot to these jams. And again, getting back to our conversation we have almost every time, which is like the people outside of the core band are adding so much to these shows. All right, Brian, what's your jam of the show?
My jam is the typical situation in the encore, which is not the longest version ever played. And I'd be curious if someone can give me context here in the comments. So the version we heard yesterday from the 12/31/96 show was extended. And that was extended with the Flecktones. This one goes into like an actual jam. And I don't know if that's a regular thing, because as someone who, you know, is admittedly coming to this from the outside, I was familiar with Typical Situation as this quiet contemplative song on Under the Table and Dreaming, and then this beautiful track on Live at Red Rocks. I did not know that this became a jam vehicle, or if it is, you know, a regular thing. Clearly they've jammed it since then. 6:22:18, like I said, that's an almost 17-minute version. This version was just over 13 minutes and like went into a really cool jam segment that I loved, that surprised me at the moment. And I was kind of shocked because I thought Bartender and Sugar Will were going to take the cake here, but Typical Situation did it. What about you?
ConcertVid 34 said it is a standard jam. So there you go.
Heard it's back this weekend. There we go.
There we go. I am going to, I think I'm going to go with the Bartender jam, partially because I mean, I love the piano in this. I like, but I also like I mentioned earlier, I like how it contrasts with the song so much. Like by the end of the jam, you have this like kind of upbeat, almost like, I don't know. I don't even know how to describe it, but it's like it's an upbeat, groovy jam with Butch kind of leading it. And I think that's just really, it's really fun and a little bit surprising coming out of that song. So I thought that was pretty cool. And I want to go back to that. Let me go back to that jam. All right. So tomorrow we're going to talk about Live Tracks 9.
We have two for,
what do you think about Live Tracks 9?
There are moments that I absolutely love on these two shows. And there are moments that absolutely confounded me. And awesome. I don't know if that's the vibe that people had from these, but I'm excited to dive in. There's a lot to talk about, and it's at a venue that, like Alpine Valley, is very near and dear to our hearts for a variety of reasons.
If anyone watching right now wants to, Brett commented, I love the Bartender jam. Roy and Carter interplay is amazing. And a flautist. Hey, Brett.
Incredible.
Thank you.
Thank you, Brett.
Anyone who's watching, if you have something that we should keep in mind as we listen to Live Tracks 9, a thought, an opinion, anything that you think might help us absorb this, because it's 39 tracks. And, you know, I'm gonna do my best to get through it because I mean I will get through it, but it's gonna be a lot. It's also a show that took place on my 28th birthday, so we're gonna look back on that time tomorrow.
It's a show that took place right after my 22nd birthday.
Yeah, that's the thing about birthdays; they're always yours and mine will always every be year. Close every year. Concert Vids 34 says Viva Las Vegas. Thank you. It's going to be that'll be a fun one. Yeah, two shows, 323 and 324, 2007. All right. So we'll see you guys back here tomorrow. Thank you so much for all the comments and for tuning in. And, you know, if you like what you hear, give us a review on Apple Podcasts, wherever you get your podcasts, or tell us what we're doing wrong or what we should do next, or just share your opinions and thoughts, because we like hearing from you. Brian, see you tomorrow.
I will see you tomorrow.
Osiris.